I greet you each this morning in Jesus' precious name. It's very good to be here. I enjoyed the service so far, especially the devotions. And I think of God's gifts, and I'd like to continue with that thought a little bit later on in the message. Sunday school lesson, practical application, practical challenges as we apply the Spirit, make the Spirit speaks to us, and we are open to the speaking of the Spirit, and can apply it to our lives. And there's going to be some practical thoughts that I'm going to share this morning, not to point fingers, but just as the Lord speaks to me and challenges me, and I'd like to share them. And you can let them speak to you, or maybe there's other areas that the Lord can speak to you this morning. For a little background, introduction to the message, where my thoughts were going, I was thinking of the disciples of Jesus Christ as he was teaching them and drawing them to him. He chose 12 men, common, ordinary men, to explain to them the pattern, life, what God intended for them to live, and he spends a very short time with them, if you think about it, 18 months as he walked with them. They got to see him every day, and then he gives his life on the cross, and he's buried, and 3 days later he rises again, and continues to work with these men for another 40 days, and then he ascends into heaven. And if you just stopped right there, the likelihood, just think about how little was left. These men were just ordinary men like you and I, left to take on, share this work. In earthly view, if you just took a snapshot of a progress report, for very little was accomplished up to that point. A lot was accomplished, but the church hadn't grown. There was very little physical evidence of anything that was accomplished. But as the Spirit came on that day at Pentecost, and those men stepped forward, and the church grew, it's just tremendous, the power that was there because of the Spirit. God working in those men, and Christ knew what he was doing. From a divine perspective, it was ultimate success. It just and it depended on the Holy Spirit working in these men to accomplish his will. and it's just fascinating how God uses men of very human, weak. We have challenges we each face, and God uses men, and he dwells in our hearts. And just think about God not dwelling in a temple made with hands, but he dwells in a in flesh and blood. it's humbling as we stop and think of God in our hearts, and his church can grow. And just 1 Corinthians 1 says, verse 27 says, God delights to use, he said, the foolish things of the world to put to shame the things of the mighty, the base things of the world, and the things which are despised God has chosen, and the things which are not, to bring to nothing the things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. It seems backwards. From an earthly standpoint, it seems like there's nothing there, but yet underneath there is a spirit, a power that's way beyond what any of us could imagine. And then, as I was meditating on that, and the other week we were down at Western Port doing some flag cleanup, and I was working with a couple of different guys come together, different backgrounds, and we were young people working, and we had this house we were supposed to dig out, all the silt that just filled in, about 2 feet of silt around the house, and for tools, they gave us two wheelbarrows, And as we were working, we soon realized this is going to be an all-day project to dig out this silt. And we started talking about how much easier if you just had a little walk behind skid letter, you could get this thing done in a couple hours. But here we didn't have it, and then we were left with shovels and a wheelbarrow, and our job was to clean up around the house. And one of the other men there, he's like, "This is what it challenges me. Is we're here to do flood cleanup, but yet the efficiency is just not there. And we have all day, we have all these men coming to help, but it's not efficient." And it just kind of started going through my mind. It's just thinking about that too. And as I was processing that situation there, the title of a song went through my mind, Little Is Much When God Is In It. And I'd like to tell you one message this morning that little is much when God is in it. Is that true? Does the Bible actually support that? As you think about the illustration that Christ used of the talents, we put our energy into multiplying these talents and using them for Him, and growing them and doing absolute best that we possibly can. Is little as much if God is in it? Is that true? Where does God come into the picture? If it's all about what I'm doing for God, does God get the full glory that He deserves? If it's all about what I can muster and everything that we can do, is God getting the full glory? Or should we think about, is God here? And is God the Spirit directing us in our life? So I got a couple of illustrations in Scripture I'd like to turn to. The first one is David. And I'd like to turn to 1 Samuel 17 and read the story here of David and Goliath. Let's just start here at 1 Samuel 17, verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Succoth, which belonged to Judah, and pitched between Succoth and Azekah in Ephes-Damon. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. And if I convert that over to English measurements, that'd be just a little less than 10 feet tall. I'm not sure. By 10 feet from the floor to the side ceiling, I would guess there. A big man, heavy set. I'm sure he was strong, very skilled in fighting. And he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was about 5,000 shekels of brass. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear had weighed 800 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shekel went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, "Why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants of Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then ye shall be our servants and serve us." And Philistine said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." And when Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. I'd just like to just pause and just think about that setting as these armies are sitting pitted against each other, and we have one man coming down and said, "We'll just solve it right here. Just two men, you guys pick a man, and we'll have a man, and we'll solve it." And you could ask, like, where was the king of Israel right there? Why these men, the armies of Israel were sitting there afraid, and says they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Well, if you turn back to chapter 16, the previous chapter, one page back, verse 14, it says, "But the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him." So that answers the question. Why wasn't Saul able to help, to give direction here to the situation? The Spirit of the Lord had departed from him. He no longer had the power of God to fight the battle. The children of Israel were in a very vulnerable position, without a king that had power of God. And they were dismayed. They were trembling. They didn't know what to do. They were unable to meet this challenge. And I just think about this whole army of horses and chariots and men, just restless and trying to decide what was going to happen. They're just powerless to fight against this giant. And I just like to think about when we don't have the Spirit of God in our hearts, the strength of a whole army with all the instruments of warfare is not enough to combat the intimidations of the enemy. Here, this Saul, the king, didn't have the Spirit of God, and this whole army was entirely powerless. But thankfully, if you look at the previous verse there in chapter 16, verse 13, it says, at the end of the verse, it says, "The Spirit of the Lord came upon David, and from that day forward. So here we have a man coming on, filled with the Spirit, and God, in his mercy, provided David to come onto the scene here. And the Spirit of God moved in his heart, and giving David a righteous anger against this man that defied the armies of the living God. I just like to continue on reading here. Let's just jump down to verse 23. We have David coming in as Aaron sent from his dad to go check on his brothers. In verse 23, "And as he talked with his brothers, talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him, and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, Have ye seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up, and it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, What shall be done to the man that killeth the Philistine, and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine, that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, So shall it be done, that the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his elder brother, heard, and when he spake unto the men, Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, Why camest thou down hither? With whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and naughtiness of thy heart, for thou art come down, and thou mightest see the battle. And David said, What have I done? Is there not a cause? And he turned from him toward another, and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner." You could say, this boy was crazy. Let's keep on reading a couple more verses here. He took a staff in his hand, and he chose him five smooth, I'm jumping down to verse 40. I'd like to continue reading here in verse 31. "And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and they sent for him. And David said to Saul, Let no man's heart fail of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. And David said unto Saul, Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him, and smote him, and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he rose against me, I caught him by his beard, and smote him, and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, Moreover, the Lord hath delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear. He will deliver me out of the hand of the Philistine. And Saul said unto David, Go, and the Lord be with thee." You think about this David stepping up to the plate, saying, I'm here. He had an inner desire to, from the Spirit, to give him strength for this. As we continue down here, Saul armed David in verse 38. Saul armed David with his armor and put on a helmet of brass upon his head, and also he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off of him. It was challenge here to think about. This David, as he comes in, and I can kind of see him as a young man say, okay, I'll try it. Saul is recommending his armor. He said, I'll try it. And he gets in there and he starts walking. He's like, this is just not going to work. I don't know anything how to use these tools. I'm going to go back with the tools that I'm used to using. And going to do what I'm more comfortable with. Just would think about like if you would take an Indian that was just skilled with a bow and arrow, and give him a rifle and a bulletproof vest and say, here, go. And he's like, I don't even know how to use this. This is kind of the same situation here. He wasn't trained. He wasn't comfortable. And verse 40, and he took a staff in his hand, and he chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in a script. And a sling was in his hand, and he drew near the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew near unto David. And the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked out and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and ruddy, and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto him, Am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, Come to me, and I will give thy flesh to the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. Then said David to the Philistine, Thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield. But I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into my hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcass of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowl of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is of the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And it came to pass that when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. David put his hand on in his bag, took thence a stone and slung it, and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his head, and he fell upon the face on the earth. And so David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him, but there was no sword in the hand of David. So therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof and slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. I just like to stop reading there. And it just, you see David coming in here and fulfilling his duty with what he was called to do. He delivered Israel with the tools he had. And it specifically makes point that there was no sword in the hand of David, simply a sling and a stone, very small. If you think of these armies that were set against each other, this army of Israel that was powerless because they didn't have the Spirit of God, and you have David coming in with a couple stones and a sling and winning the battle. It's a challenge to me as little is much when God is in it. And these armies rise up and they pursue the Philistines, but the battle was already won. David had won the battle with only a sling and a stone. And as we look at Goliath, he steps up and he calls the shots. He says, this is how it's going to be. He wasn't prepared to fight against a sling as a weapon, but God knew that was the weakness of Goliath, and he provided a plan. Now, often we read of Israel coming out to battle, And there's so little that they need to do to fight. We go on and we read the story of coming into Jericho, and they surround it. They simply walk around Jericho. Very little that they needed to do, and the walls fall down. And shortly after that, they go to Ai, and they say, well, we don't need all our men. Just some of us could go up here, take out this little town. And they were just dramatically defeated by the people of Ai, because God was no longer in their midst. and just important that little is much when God is in it. Now, it's easy to think that we can fight against the devil on our own, but when we're not relying on the weapons of the Spirit, we're going to be majorly overwhelmed. and just, again, like to think, we're not limited in our by how we can serve with our skills, our possessions. We're not limited. We just need to ask God to give us the strength, the Spirit, for serving small things. As a young boy, when I was probably 20, I was thinking about, I had most of my money tied up in vehicles. And I was down just there at Westernport, and we got there that morning. And we stood around in a circle, and we were discussing, the crew leaders explaining what the plans were for the day. And then we jumped in vehicles and going to go over to drive over to where we were working. And I went down there by myself, and there's another young man that showed up by himself. And we were standing beside each other, and we're like, well, we could go together. I said, well, sure. And his truck was closer. We just jumped in his truck, and he had this little S10, just very basic, older truck. And we jumped in, and he went to start it, and the ignition wouldn't work. And so he partially climbs out, reach underneath the dash, and starts fiddling with wires trying to get it to work, and jumps back in and tries to get it, wouldn't start. So he's like, is there pliers? I say, well, we looked around, there was some tools there in the truck, and sure enough, there were the pliers. He jumped out, well, he made sure it was in neutral, jumps out, and climbs underneath of it, and jump starts the starter, and got it running, jumps back in, and away we go. And and go down through town, and I notice between the two seats, there's this lever sticking up, kind of odd, strange, kind of strange beside the gear shifter, piece of metal. And I asked him, I was like, what's that for? He said, well, the electrical doesn't work very well to shift it into four-wheel drive. So he decided just to make a manual lever to switch it to four-wheel drive. It's faster, and it works better. And he's like, this thing's got a lot of problems. Windows don't work. But he's like, I got it for $2,000. And he said, it does what I need it to do. And I was just challenged because, you know, if I was a young man with that kind of a contentment, I'd probably have been a lot further ahead. And, you know, maybe it was just the adventure of the whole situation. It's great as long as he doesn't drive over himself sometimes getting the thing started. But you know, in my life, it really challenged me maybe life is boring because we have vehicles that work every day. But just, how much further, how much better and more time does he have to serve without making vehicle payments? Just challenged to me as he was there working and just friendly, great person to work with. Another practical idea here is thinking of hospitality. Heard a story once of a family that wanted to have some friends over, and they didn't know what they were going to feed them, so they said, well, you know what, we'll have them over for an evening, and we could make up a couple cookies. So they sit around the table and they chat, and the lady makes up a batch of cookies, and after the smell of the aroma of the cookies has them all good and hungry, they sit down and eat the freshly made cookies and a glass of water, and they had a very enjoyable time together. And you know, in my life, sometimes we go to have company, or if we're host this weekend, Sunday, and got to get everything mowed up and looking fresh, and ready for company. It's okay, I think, but sometimes I think we overdo that, and how much more hospitality could we have if we just simply, shared, it just spent time together, simple things, just a challenge to me. Little is much when God is in it. And I had to think also of the illustration of the Shunammite woman for Elijah. And there's four things in that room. There was a table, a bed, a stool, and a candlestick. And something about the minimalist part of me thinks that that would be just a beautiful place to get away, retrieve from the busyness of life, and to just sit there and quiet and commune with God. A short net blessed Elijah tremendously with her service there. Now, I'd like to turn to the story of Joseph. You turn to Genesis 39. Genesis 39, verses 20-23. Next point I wanted to point out is that position doesn't make a difference. And we have Joseph here in verse 20. And Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, a place where king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hands all the prisoners that were in the prison. Whatsoever they did, he was the doer of it. And the king of the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him. And that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. We see Joseph there serving faithfully. And the lowest place in society is in the king's prison. I would expect it was the dungeon underground, but there he was serving the best of his ability. And it says the Lord was with him, and he made it to prosper. And then, so we have him serving there. And then a couple verses later, next chapter in verse 6, Joseph gives came in unto them in the morning, and he looks upon the men with the serving again, and he realizes that they're sad, and he asks them, and they tell him a dream. And turn over to verse chapter 41, verse 38, and we have Joseph interpreting the dreams. And Pharaoh said unto the servants, "Can we find?" And then later he gets asked to interpret the dream for Pharaoh, and Pharaoh said unto the servants, "Can we find such a one as this man, in whom the Spirit of God is?" And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, "For as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than you." And this, I'm always amazed when I get to this story, as a dramatic change from the underground dungeon to the king's second in command. But you see the faithfulness of Joseph working in the small areas, the small, just where he was put, where he was led. And then as he changes into second in the command, he continues on that faithfulness, faithfully serving in the place that God has called us is the most powerful thing that we can do. Doesn't matter where we are, we just focus on serving what God, doing what we can to meet the needs around us. God can use us in whatever position in life we are at, whether it's dutifully working in a machine shop in the back, and or out mowing grass for a neighbor, or singing to an elderly couple, many different things, small things. We never realize the impact it has on people's life. And we may think, well, it wasn't, we were just simply, handing food to the butler and baker, or listening to they saw their countenance was sad, and so he's listening to their story. So many people just need a listening ear, and if we can just be there for that, I think it's a way that God can work tremendously. And just also thought about the illustration. I'm not going to turn there for sake of time this morning, but the story of the young girl that was a slave to Naaman. a captain. It seemed like life had did her a bad hand. She was in a bad, taken away from her family. But as she served there, to Naaman, just waited on faithfully and served him. She was able to provide healing for him. Now I'd like to just turn over to Exodus 3, the example of Moses. We have him, and this point is physical weakness gives God another opportunity to be glorified. And we see that in Moses and Exodus 3, 10 and verse 10. We have Moses talking to, discussing with God, and God calls him. He says, "Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." And Moses said unto God, "Who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh, and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt?" And if we just turn over to the next chapter, chapter 4, verse 10, and Moses again, and God gives him quite clear demonstrations that he is going to be with him. And Moses continues, he feels inadequate. In verse 10, and Moses said unto the Lord, "O Lord, I am not eloquent, neither heretofore, nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant. But I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue." And the Lord said unto him, "Who hath made man's mouth? Or who speaketh, maketh the dumb, or deaf, or the seeing of the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with thy mouth, and teach thee what thou shalt say." And he said, "O my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him whom thou wilt send." And the next verse says, "And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses." I'm also challenged by the fact in verse 11 as of the Lord telling Moses, "Who made your mouth? Who made you?" And just to stop and think about, the one that has made us and created us is the one that can give us the power to meet his calling, the one his plans are for our lives. Even in our own personal weakness, God can empower us to fulfill his calling. And when I say, "Lord, I can't," is actually a slap in the face to the one who has created us specifically for his purpose. And Paul talks about that in 2 Corinthians 12. He says, "And lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of revelations that was given me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing I besought the Lord twice that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ can rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in my infirmities and reproaches and necessities and persecutions and distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong." And as maybe pray this morning that God would come and fill the empty, inadequate places in our lives, so that in our weakness that he could receive the full glory that's due his name. And as we think back across these illustrations, Satan would love if we could just get our focus off of the areas that we're get our focus off of the areas that we aren't good at, and get us to think about like our weaknesses. And if we had the ability to let our weaknesses control us and open up ourselves to the power of we have the ability to let our weaknesses control us, or to open ourselves to the power of Christ so that he can be glorified. If he could have got David to think about his weakness, his limited strength there in front of that Goliath, that giant, he would have lost. David would have lost, and the battle would have been the Philistines. If he could have got Joseph to fall into self-pity and in the prison, Joseph wouldn't have been the ruler. He could have gotten him to fall, but you see how our perspective changes things. If you think of our focus on God and the grace and the power that he can give to us, or our focus is on ourselves, what we think we can or can't do. Keep our focus on what God can do for us, and God will fill these gaps. But we need to be giving our all. And if I think back across the, back to my where I was talking about the talents, little is much when God is in it. But if God is in it, it ends up being more like we are giving our all, our little being much, being all that we have, even though it's little, with God in it, it's satisfactory. And just think about the talents. In Matthew 25, we have these talents, these men coming in. You have the five talents, the two talents, and the one talent. I don't think we should focus on how much talents we have here today, but that we're using all the talents that God has given us to His glory, to His strength. I think that maybe how many times am I given five talents and I keep one talent and I take those other four and I multiply them into eight talents? am I using every talent that I have to God's honor and glory? You think also back across these illustrations again. David, skilled with a sling, the talent he had. And God empowered David with a simple sling to kill a giant. And Joseph, good at caring for the needs of the people around him in prison, was then able to care for the needs of the people in the whole nation. And as Moses, as he didn't want to lead Israel, but allowed God to give him the words to speak and the strength and wisdom for each challenge he needed to face, they have a whole nation that was freed from captivity. And the little girl, served Naaman's wife, as God gave her the strength to forgive and to give a solution for Naaman's disease, Naaman was healed. You have this leader suddenly start getting an impression of who the true God of Israel was. I think it's important that it's not how many talents we're given, but that we use them even if we feel like we only have one, that we give it. And as God can use that to bless His kingdom in ways that we never felt possible. And as we, again, little is much when God is in it. Let's bow for prayer this morning. Dear Lord, we're coming before you this morning, this beautiful day. I just thank you for this opportunity to worship you and come together as brothers and search your face, find your face, and thank you for being in our lives, the direction you've given us, the strength you've given us for each day, and yes, that you would just help us to look up to you and to reach out in love and service to the people around us. Help us not to look to ourselves, but to look to you for the strength for each day. I ask that you would just help us to keep our lamps trimmed and burning, and that a light would radiate from this community here and from the kingdom at large across the globe. Others come to you and search you and seek your face and reach out and live lives that reflect your love and draw others to you, and just continue to be with us as we leave here, that your name could be honored and glorified. I ask these things in your precious name. Amen.